Hello again. This is Uncle Don, back with another program of Uncle Don Reads the Comics on CFUR, campus-based community radio in Prince George. This is show number 18 for the 23rd of October, 2002. I regret that I had to skip two Wednesdays of programming, but I was busy with my training camp in Pakistan. Lots of exciting experiences there, and all expenses paid. Not much of a holiday, but it was enlightening. I learned to say, "Down with the Yankee imperialist warmongers and their running dog lackeys," in five languages, including broken English. By the way, I found where Osama bin Laden has been hiding. Don't tell the CIA, but Osama has chosen to blend into a location that has become a traditional refuge for war criminals, retired dictators, and their money for some decades now. Osama has cast off his turban and is now stuffing tacos in a joint in Miami. He's learning English and has taken an interest in basketball. He will be opening his own aviation school in the countryside as soon as the heat dies down. You heard it first from Uncle Don. The next week's program. Yes, I intend to be here next week, and I have a new feature for the program. Door prizes. Don't miss it. Truth in broadcasting time. All right, I really did not really go to Pakistan, as I said. I lied. Would you believe I spent my time in Washington, D.C. renewing my skills as a marksman? No, I did not do that either, but I did have time to think a step ahead of the cops on this one. That shooter in Washington is an animal rights activist. He found a way to get the government to cancel hunting season down there, didn't he? Now Bubba can't go out and kill Bambi's mother, so he won. His targets were just collateral damage. Okay, my real story. I only came up with a Pakistan story so that no one would worry about me. I actually took my life in my hands by driving with my wife down the Sea to Sky Highway from Lillooet to North Vancouver. This drive included that treacherous section from Whistler to the big city where our cash-strapped provincial government intends to drop $1 billion or so for improvements. Woody and I, Woody is my current wife, have determined that there needs to be a two-step program to improve safety on this highway. First, cancel the mad idea of hosting Olympic Games in Vancouver-Whistler that would require massive road traffic between these venues. Second, put a half dozen traffic cops on this stretch of road full-time to catch the jockeys of the hot rods and urban assault vehicles that use this road as a racetrack, connecting their work with their recreational properties in Whistler. The road is safe if driven at posted speeds and in a responsible manner. Enforcing existing traffic laws would save more than $1 billion in construction costs, not to mention lives, as well as generating revenue from those who insist on speeding and reckless driving. Each cop on that road would more than cover his or her costs and fines. Simple problem, simple low-tech solution. The joys of Victoria. On this recent trip, we visited Victoria twice. The first visit was more fun than the second. After successfully navigating the Sea to Sky Highway, we took the ferry north to the Sunshine Coast and meandered north along this beautiful piece of coastline to Lund at the end of the road. We spent nights in Gibson's, Sea Shelt, and Powell River before crossing to Comox on Vancouver Island. We drove to Nanaimo, where we looked up old friends, and on to Victoria to visit other friends. Then we drove up to Port Renfrew, spending a night in Jordan River. In Jordan River, we found a bed and breakfast with an ocean view and a fancy price tag, but we figured the view was worth the price. I had a lively discussion with Bill, the host, that in the evening. We discussed politics, naturally, and did not come to blows, even though he came at the topic from a position somewhat to the right of mine. In the morning, politics arose again as Bill's wife, Daphne, prepared breakfast. Bill disappeared. We soon found out why. He's pretty far to the left of his wife, and it appears that they maintain domestic peace by avoiding such areas of discussion. I was impressed by Daphne's knowledge of politics, if not her perspective on the subject. Woody soon enlightened me as to why Daphne knew her politics. She pointed out a framed photograph of Daphne with Jean Chrétien and another of all the members of a past session of Parliament, which included Daphne. She had been a member of Parliament for the Reform Party. In fact, she said that one of her good friends was Dick Harris, our beloved member of Parliament. I told Daphne of a treasured letter I preserved from Dick Harris. One time I pulled Dick's chain while he was on one of his crusades against drinking drivers. I fabricated a letterhead for an organization I called DAM, Drunkards Against Mad Mothers, and wrote him an irate letter in favor of drinking and driving. It appears that Dick has a tender spot when it comes to such things, as I received a return letter from Dick with this opening paragraph: "I have read your letter and can only conclude that unless this is a joke, you are indeed an idiot." It is not every day that a member of Parliament calls me an idiot, although that day may come if Uncle Don's notoriety spreads. I treasure that letter proclaiming my idiocy, and I will be sending a copy on to our hostess, Daphne, for her information and enlightenment. From Jordan River, we drove back to Victoria, and the unplanned portion of our trip began. As we came into Souk, just outside of Victoria, the transmission began to act up and refused to shift into high gear. This was, of course, on a Friday afternoon before the Thanksgiving weekend. We inflicted ourselves on a friend in Victoria and made a few phone calls. There was no way that we could get any service before Tuesday, so we hunkered down and played tourist. The car was fine in the first three gears, but we had to avoid the freeways. On Tuesday, we took the car to a mechanic who confirmed that it was neither a simple nor a cheap problem. He sent us to a transmission shop that gave a similar prognosis, neither simple nor cheap. Explorations were made, parts were removed, replacements were ordered, time passed. We finally got on the road 3 days later with a transmission rebuilt and our credit suitably burdened. Saturday saw us arrive here tired and glad to be back in Prince George. Credit cards. I've railed against credit cards often in the past, but I intend to modify my stand on them in the future. It was our credit card that saved our bacon on this trip. We've had a Visa card for years and only used it a couple of times. This card is carried for emergencies or in circumstances where there's no way around using it. We've made ferry reservations using the card and ordered a couple of things by phone using it. In Victoria, we were hit with a repair bill of over $1,800, and we were a bit shy of that amount in cash. Click, click, and the total was put on plastic, and we were on our way. I believe that there is no problem in having a credit card if one does not use it habitually or as a source of revolving credit. If you can carry it and forget it, a credit card can be a lifesaver. Sumas and Sovereignty. We came back north via Tuasin and the Fraser Valley. It soon became clear to us why the valley residents are opposed to the proposed Sumas power plant. We both felt a tightness in our chests all the way to Hope. The air is not fit to breathe now, and I can imagine a gas-fired power plant on the Yankee side of the border will make it worse. If Canada were a sovereign country, we would explain to the Yanks that they cannot build their power plant in Sumas, as we would refuse to supply the natural gas that they intend to burn in it. Simple problem, simple solution. This is CFUR at 88.7 on your FM dial. We are broadcasting from our spacious studios in the University of Northern British Columbia. CFUR is a knife-free zone. I am Uncle Don, bringing you another half hour of Uncle Don Reads the Comics. Send irate letters to me, care of CFUR Radio, 3333 University Way, Prince George, B.C., V2N4Z9. Something Rotten in Denmark. While we were on the road, I picked up the Globe and Mail when I could to keep in touch with the world and support my blood pressure. I have a few clippings from these papers that I will comment upon. The first in the pile is a lengthy article on the situation in, quote, post-liberation Afghanistan. George Bush promised that the United States would not forget Afghanistan this time, thus acknowledging that the help promised after the Mujahideen forced the Russians out never materialized. There's a chart in the article listing the national pledges to the, quote, Afghanistan Reconstruction Trust Fund and the amounts delivered so far. The highest pledge is from Great Britain, which promised $150 million. It has so far delivered over $15 million on that pledge. The Netherlands promised $34 million, which has been delivered. George Bush's superpower has promised all of $5 million and delivered all of it. After spending something like $11 billion to bomb Afghanistan, they've made a contribution of $5 million to repair the damage. No, the United States will not forget the people of Afghanistan this time. Perhaps they will put up a plaque in an obscure corner of Washington. But that is not what attracted my attention to this article. I had expected treachery and duplicity from the United States. What else is new? One of the donors to this reconstruction of Afghanistan is Denmark. They pledged $5 million just like the United States, although they did not engage in the destruction. But the amount that they delivered is only $4,999,974. They were $26 short. Did someone in Denmark have his sticky fingers in the till? Were donuts purchased from this pledge money before it could be delivered? I lost sleep over this problem until it occurred to me that someone in Denmark's Ministry of Foreign Assistance probably sent a clerk to the post office with a suitcase full of money to buy a $5 million money order, and the fee was deducted from the donation. After all, it is difficult to imagine corruption on this scale in Denmark. Now I can sleep again. More intrusions into privacy. The government of Canada has taken another bite into what is left of our right to privacy. Now there will be a database maintained on all Canadians who travel abroad by air. This database will be shared across ministries and, no doubt, with the security apparatus in the United States. No longer can we feel free to go where we please without worrying about triggering an investigation based on our pattern of travels. According to the editorial I read, there is no legislation specifically allowing this accumulation of information. It is just another step into our personal lives, justified by a need to know the peregrinations of suspected terrorists. Travel to suspicious destinations where there are known terrorist cells, and Miami comes immediately to mind, might trigger Revenue Canada into taking a second look at your tax returns, or the RCMP to look at what periodicals you subscribe to. Of course, you could fool the cops by taking a subscription to the Prince George Citizen or the National Enquirer, thus giving the illusion that you are brain dead and harmless, but we should not be tailoring our personal lives to satisfy the paranoids of the RCMP or CSIS, nor, in fact, of the SBI. Just another small bite, nothing to worry about. I have a personal interest in this little bit of intrusion. I've been to Cuba 6 times. 5 of those times might be of interest to the United States, and they probably know of them anyway. The first visit was on an American Navy troop ship, so it is probably not an object of suspicion to the Yanks. If I had not been an American citizen until 24 years ago, I would not worry. But there recently, but we have seen recently how much respect the Americans show for Canadians who are not born here. Since I was born in the States, they might consider me to be a dual citizen if that suits their purposes. If I am a citizen in their eyes, I could be subject to penalties for traveling to Cuba and for not filing American income tax returns for the past quarter century. Under their laws, I might spend a lot of time as a guest of their correction system. For this reason, I will not set foot in the United States, even to change planes. It was only last month that the United States kidnapped a Canadian citizen of Syrian origin and shipped him off to Syria without the knowledge of the Canadian government. Just another example of American disdain for international laws and diplomatic agreements when they confine the American aims. A study of Canadian obesity. A team of researchers at UBC has recently completed a study aimed at determining why Orientals tend to have less body fat than Occidentals. They came to a startling conclusion that is going to have an impact on some of us right here in Prince George. This study took into account many variables relating to differences in diet, exercise, vitamin intake, and relative average stature. But there was a significant difference that remained to be explained. One other factor was revealed to have a direct and major relationship to body fat. It was the height of the surface from which food is eaten. While Western cultures dine from tables at an average height of 74 centimeters, tables in Japan, China, and the Koreas, yes, Virginia, there are 2 Koreas, average only 47 centimeters. Dr. Bruno Zumbo, formerly of UNBC, did a statistical analysis relating body fat to height of eating surfaces and determined that there is a straight line relationship where each added centimeter of table height correlates to 230 milligrams of extra body fat. The hypothesis to be tested is that a causal relationship involves the act of bending over a table when eating. Bending constricts the volume of food that the stomach can hold. Over time, this leads to a smaller intake of food at each meal, hence a smaller stomach, a lower caloric intake, and less body fat. UNBC will be participating in a project to test this hypothesis by using students in the residences who have the food plan. Participating students will be divided into 2 groups, one of which will spend the next semester eating regular meals at shorter tables in the cafeteria, while a control group eats at regular tables. Researchers from the faculties of health science, nursing, and psychology hope to be able to come to conclusions that could have long-term effects on public health. Students wishing to participate in this study should apply to the residence manager. A stipend will be offered to all student volunteers. Participating professors are hoping that these stipends will not be spent on Twinkies. George Bush again. Did you ever wonder why George Bush looks and acts like that? Just think what you would be like if you had been potty trained by Barbara Bush. Now George is speculating publicly about possible plans by Saddam Hussein to attack Israel. I suppose Iraq could justify such an act as, quote, anticipatory preemption, unquote, the euphemism that George uses to mean attack, but it would also be suicidal. I do not think that Saddam Hussein is a nice guy. After all, he used to be on the payroll of the CIA, an organization which does not employ angels. But I don't think he is an idiot either. Could George Bush be misleading us? Remember the notorious events of 9/11? Such events were used as a rationalization for attacking Afghanistan, since it supposedly harbored Osama bin Laden, a man who was not an Afghan but a Saudi. After 15 of these And 15 of these 19 suiciders were Saudis. Well, George did not find Osama, but that's not important since the man seems to have moved to Pakistan. But George proclaimed a victory in this war because the Taliban government had been routed and the warlords put back in charge of that benighted land. Where did this come from? Now America must ignore Pakistan, which seems to have bin Laden, but also has nuclear weapons. And they will ignore Saudi Arabia, which has a government arguably worse than the Taliban, and which has supplied 79% of the perpetrators, but which has oil. Better to go after someone who is demonstrably unable to retaliate, but which has oil. Iraq was thoroughly whipped a dozen years ago, and recovery has been stifled by an embargo. Weapons inspectors made sure that 90% of Iraq's weapons were found and destroyed. George said that these weapons inspectors must be allowed unfettered access to all sites in Iraq to look for weapons, stores, and production. Hussein called George's bluff and offered to let them back in. George is a man who will not take yes for an answer. He and his fundamentalist cabinet have decided that they will have their war with Iraq and will not accept surrender as an alternative. Man, this Bush brazen, and his people eat it up. But we can't crow. We elected Campbell. Now George has suddenly discovered a brand new threat in North Korea. We knew they were nominated to the Axis of Evil, but George had not been leaning on that branch of the Axis yet. Suddenly a map appeared in the Globe and Mail showing dozens of locations around North Korea that produce or store biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons. Funny thing that the CIA could not have infiltrated the Globe and Mail with spies to get that map long ago. Or maybe those spy flights over Asia have just been snapping photos of happy peasants. For all of the weaponry that North Korea is suddenly found to possess, it seems that George is reluctant to go after it, as he is so willing to do in Iraq. Do you think that this might fit into my proposal that the modern United States is ready to thrash any country that cannot fight back, but it shies away from that country that would retaliate? Schoolyard bullies are cowards. I guess this applies also to emperors, who seem to have been done too much drinking from lead pipes. Now for today's terrorist alerts. As a public service, Uncle Don will now present the cumulative terrorist alerts for Prince George. Alerts have been updated by the Department of Homeland Security as of 6 a.m. today and should hold for the next 24 hours. West of the bypass, there have been no specific alerts and all is code yellow except for isolated reports of possible sabotage, especially to the foothills and John Hart bridges. Electrical transmission lines should be watched. East of Highway 16, there's a code orange for George Street after dark. All residents are advised to keep their doors locked, not to speak to strangers, and to report all swarthy men to the Terrorist Information and Prevention System at 1-800-PARANOID. This has been a public service from Uncle Don Terror Watch Central. Onward to the Campbell Regime Report. From the Who Voted for These Bastards desk of the Uncle Don think tank comes the following. It seems that everyone in the province who makes less than $500,000 a year has been screwed by this new so-called liberal government, but Campbell's approval ratings remain high. It cannot just be the fact that there's no creditable opposition. Polls are not even registering none of the above. Could it be that the polls that claim this great support are skewed? I just got my first screwing the other day. I'm drawing a pension from the provincial civil service. I'm losing my medical coverage that was supposed to be part of the pension I received for past service. Now it is gone, but I'm in a hell of a better place than many. I've not had myself declared employable merely because I'm able to tie my own shoelaces. I've not been thrown off welfare, nor was I forced to take a miserable job at $6 an hour or peddle my ass on the street. I'm not facing jail time without legal aid. I'm not in the situation of a friend in Victoria whose brother is on the verge of being evicted from a group home for the mentally challenged unless he pays a bribe to the owner of the establishment, as the government will not cover all the costs anymore. Another friend in Victoria has a doctorate in social history, and he's been politically active for decades. He declined to talk at any length about the Liberal regime, as he said with his blood pressure, the problem of thinking of Campbell is liable to kill him. But he did make the following prediction about the way this government is planning its moves. For the balance of this term, they will dismantle the social safety net. In the next term, after an election with no credible alternative, they will dispose of all the Crown assets. Kiss goodbye to BC Hydro, ICBC, most schools, hospitals, and any property that can be given to the private sector. The election after that, they don't care who wins. The spoils will be gone, and they will have all the assets in private hands. When I asked my friend what he saw as a blueprint for what they aim to achieve, he concluded the conversation by saying, "Read your Dickens." The cost of war. It's been pointed out to me that if you took all the money that has been spent on the war on terror in the last year, converted it into $100 bills, and laid these bills out end to end along the Trans-Canada Highway from Victoria east toward Newfoundland, people would steal them all. Eternal food. The United States military has invented an indestructible sandwich which can be stored for years without deterioration. You may have heard this in the news. The U.S. Army has been in the forefront of research into food since the first Army cook devised a method of turning good food into feces without passing it through the human body. But that's just rumor. I rather liked the Army food, fool and glutton that I was. But back to the indestructible sandwich. I have no idea what the research for the creation of this monster was, but they could have saved the money by looking at the venerable Twinkie, a confection that lasts forever in a plain plastic wrapper. The secret of indefinite preservation, of course, is to use only ingredients that would be of no interest whatsoever to any microorganism. Bacteria have too much self-respect to be caught near a Twinkie. The new GI sandwich is probably based on this principle. Belated recognition. The last time I drove in the States, I noticed that there had been a proliferation of types of automobile license plates. Whereas British Columbia has two kinds of plates, a normal plate and a vanity plate, some states seem to have dozens. These special plates must be a real cash cow to these state governments. There are license plates that will announce your alma mater or your hobby. Many proudly tell the world that the car's owner is a veteran of one of the armed services. But the strangest plates I saw, and I saw several, declared that the driver was a former POW, or prisoner of war. To me, this is like announcing that I won second prize in a fist fight. Hey, look, I lost! After I saw several of these POW plates, it occurred to me that I had not seen a single one for an MIA. Recall that the big fuss made in the States for the last quarter century has been about POWs and MIAs. MIA, of course, stands for Missing in Action, and it can cover a lot of sins. Many of the MIAs in Vietnam are reputed to have called a personal timeout in the war and retreated to the bush and gone native. Some of these missing soldiers must have returned home eventually, and I do hope that the several states do their share in seeing that these boys get the recognition that they deserve. I feel especially strongly about the MIAs since I see that those killed in action, or KIAs, now have their own brand of automobile, the Kia. Let's hear some support for our veterans out there. The bombing in Bali. 30 years ago, I traveled through South Asia and, like many thousands of others, I spent a week or so in Bali. I stayed in a small house a block or so from the famous Kuta Beach. For a couple of bucks a day, I had a room in a private home and a plate of fresh fruit for breakfast every morning. The beach was broad and clean, and there were a lot of friendly locals and travelers who made the island a real paradise for anyone with money. Of course, the local citizens scraped for a living, and a dollar was not easy to come by. For a couple of cents, a kid would climb a palm, bring down a coconut, and cut it open for me. Life was easy for travelers. Tea was expensive, as I saw another traveler pay several dollars for a bag of the stuff. Of course, he thought he was buying pot, but there's one born every minute 30 years ago, too. One evening, I was hanging out in a small makeshift cafe where I met a young German. We decided to throw reason to the wind and blow a bunch of money on beer. The cafe sold Heineken beer in the large bottles for a couple of dollars each. Considering the local cost of living, this was a fortune. We were each into our third bottle when it occurred to both of us that we were not feeling the beer. It was de-alcoholized. Of course it was. The island of Bali is mostly Hindu, but the country of Indonesia is overwhelmingly Muslim, and alcohol was illegal. When I heard of the recent bombing of a nightclub in Bali, I was surprised that there were such things there. I have no idea when Indonesia allowed alcohol to be sold in the country, but I know how deeply offended Muslims must be at seeing drinking and carousing in their country. The Yanks were probably predictably quick to blame Al-Qaeda for the bombing, but it could have been any fundamentalist Muslim group that sponsored it. After all, they were just doing their God's work. Predictable also was the reaction of the Indonesian government in cracking down on its internal enemies. As in so many countries responding to the American War on Terror scare, they are settling old scores in Indonesia. Using this war as a cover for crackdowns and repressive legislation seems to be an international pastime now. Of course, the Americans find this pleasing, and it works into their plans for empire. I have no doubt that the government of Canada has some nasty legislation on hold, just awaiting the first excuse to ram it through Parliament when some internal crime can be billed as terrorism. Hang on for a rough ride. There was one more item of concern that I have heard no more about in the Bali bombing. Supposedly, the explosive used was C4, a military product. Did they ever find out how the bombers got a hold of C4? Do they want to know? Good news. This is the end of this session of Uncle Don Reads the Comics. This is Uncle Don on CFUR Radio 88.7 on your dial in Prince George. Don't let the bastards grind you down.
These kids are like I was at their age. They pay scant attention.